This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. After a week on the stand, prosecutors are attempting to regain control of their own witness, whose testimony was hijacked by defense attorneys in the trial of former Massey CEO Don Blankenship. Former Performance Coal president and Upper Big Branch mine operator Chris Blanchard took the stand last Thursday and continues his testimony in Charleston Federal Court today. In this week's episode of the podcast, Blankenship on Trial, Dave Mistich discusses the latest in the case with Charleston attorney Mike Hissom and West Virginia Public Broadcasting's Ashton Mara.
Essentially, after 4 days of cross-examination by the defense, the prosecution began redirecting Blanchard this morning. Early on in cross, Blanchard contradicted a lot of his previous testimony. Initially, he testified, for instance, that he had told Blankenship mining in one certain area of the coal mine was illegal, and Blankenship responded, "Well, you're allowing MSHA to run your mines." Then on cross, almost immediately after saying that, he said he did not break any laws at UBB and that he had no unwritten understanding, no conspiracy with Don Blankenship to violate those safety laws. Assistant U.S. Attorney Steve Ruby came back today, pulling out Blanchard's grand jury testimony, and without really saying it, he kind of implied that Blanchard had been lying on his cross-examination. It's important to remember here, Dave, that Blanchard has immunity in this case. He agreed to testify for the prosecution because they agreed not to charge him or use his testimony against him. The only caveat there is that he can't lie on the stand.
Mike, I know you all discussed this last week, but we do have a caveat that Bailey and Glasser is representing Blanchard, but you have been screened from the case, correct? That's
right, Dave. When I joined the firm, I was screened off from that matter.
Still, Mike, during a long cross-examination, defense attorneys have basically hijacked Blanchard, many people saying he's hurt the prosecution's case more than he's helped it. What exactly is their strategy there?
Well, it's not a new strategy, Dave. The defense team throughout the trial has been trying to take over the government witnesses and introduce their documents, their theory of the case. I don't think that we've seen it done to this extent. And honestly, I don't think that anybody is familiar with a recent case where it's been done to this extent. We have Chris Blanchard testifying, who testified for about a day of court time on direct examination when the government was asking him questions. He's now been testifying for almost a week on cross-examination, and only today did the government begin asking questions on redirect. The defense has put on hundreds of documents through him. They've really tried their theme of the case, and what makes this so unusual is that Chris Blanchard is clearly such a reluctant witness for the government. He is giving the defense team the answers that they want on most of the questions.
And Ashton, you know, would you say that the defense's strategy has been effective in sort of hijacking Blanchard here?
You know, Dave, I'm not an attorney. This is not a legal opinion. But as somebody who could be sitting there as a juror, I'm going to go out on a limb and say, no, this was not effective. I mean, like Mike said, we went through hundreds of documents. The last count was like 170 or something like that. These are emails, memos, charts. It was really tedious testimony. There were jurors that were asleep. There were people who were in the audience watching the case that were asleep during these multiple days of testimony. They were trying to prove with Blanchard that safety was a priority at Massey, but I just think it got lost in all of the minute details. People were just too bored.
Interesting. So, Mike, redirect has started. How does the prosecution get this witness and essentially their case back on track?
Well, they started right out of the gate, Dave, by jamming the witness up with his grand jury testimony and some pretty hard biting questions to really get at Chris Blanchard and get his attention and the jury's attention. And it was a totally different style and pace from the government when they started redirect. It was fast-paced, staccato questions, very direct, a lot of leading questions. And that was an aggressive style that we haven't seen from the government so far. I would say after that opening, things sort of bogged down again with a slow and steady march through the documents, through the government's own documents and through the defense exhibits. And it's pretty clear, and one important point is that the judge is not allowing re-cross-examination. So the last aspect of testimony that the jury is going to hear from Blanchard is going to be Steve Ruby's redirect. and they're going to go through all of these documents again so that the jury will hear them.
Again, that was Charleston attorney Mike Hissom and West Virginia Public Broadcasting's Ashton Mara discussing the latest in the trial of former Massey Energy CEO Don Blankenship. To listen to the full podcast, visit our website, wvpublic.org/Blankenship, or subscribe on iTunes. This is West Virginia Morning. It's 7:49. Mostly cloudy skies in the north today, partly sunny in the south, daytime highs in the 40s and low 50s. Partly cloudy tonight with lows in the 30s, partly sunny on Saturday with highs in the 50s and low 60s. There's a chance of rain Saturday night and Sunday.
Support for the weather forecast is provided by Erie Insurance, putting service first since 1925. Local agents available at erieinsurance.com.
Tomorrow is All Hallows Eve, and you and your family might be dressing up in a costume for your celebration, or you may be gearing up to watch a scary film on TV. Now, I personally don't like horror movies, and I've never wanted to visit a haunted house. Truthfully, I'm prone to nightmares. But I have to admit that West Virginia has some of the strangest and most mystifying ghost tales and legends that I've ever heard. In the latest episode of Inside Appalachia, Jessica Lilly and Roxy Todd talk to writers and folklorists who share their favorite West Virginia spooky story. Roxy Todd has a preview.
As a kid or a teenager, I didn't scare as easily as I do now. I don't know what it is about getting older that makes me get goosebumps when I hear creepy ghost stories. And West Virginia has some of the best.
I thought that's peculiar. Roses there in the woods.
All of a sudden, there was an explosion. Boom! And this particular group of miners was trapped.
I heard this scream, just like a wow, you know. Now let go of the water bucket and let it go back into the creek and ran home.
West Virginia has some of the best settings for scary stories. Dark underground coal mines, remote forests. There are hundreds of remarkably bizarre, mysterious ghost tales that take place here in West Virginia. And maybe the most fascinating part is, for some of these tales, there's historical evidence that says they might have actually happened. Take this one, the Greenbrier Ghost, which is the only story I know of where the description of a ghost sighting was actually documented in a court case.
And then one night, Zona's mother, she awakes, and she sees her daughter, a ghost of her daughter, at the foot of her bed.
That's writer Scott McClanahan, who grew up just a few miles from where the ghost of Zona Heaster supposedly appeared, outside the logging town of Raynell.
And the ghost says, "I didn't die the way he said I died. I wasn't just sick and passed away. He murdered me. He broke my neck. Help." The way I heard it, then she goes and gets the sheriff. The ghost appears that night in front of the mother, in front of the sheriff.
You'll have to listen to Inside Appalachia this week to hear what happened after the sheriff saw the Greenbrier ghost. Not every spooky story involves a ghost, but miles and miles of untamed forests lie at the edge of most of these tales. Like in Pocahontas County, where I lived for one winter, my neighbor, Iva Williams, told me about a frightening experience she had back in the 1950s.
And when I got to the kitchen door, the table was sitting there, and that window was broke out right there, too. This big old black cat was sitting on the bench, clawing at the window. But I moved the lamp so I could see it better, you know. It looked in the lamp just for a minute. The bright shine made his eyes glassy and just dived right out the window like he was diving in a pool or something with his arms outstretched.
Iva Williams was a little girl at the time, and the DNR says there weren't any panthers in West Virginia in the 1950s. But it seems like it could be true, doesn't it? A lot of West Virginia stories are like that. Whether you think of these tales as fact, myth, history, or folklore, I say, if there were ever a time of year to suspend your disbelief, it's Halloween. And since I get spooked pretty easily, I prefer to listen to these stories on the radio, cozied up with a wool blanket, and try to imagine that instead of my orange kitty beside me, it's really a big black panther. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Roxy Todd.
Death don't have no mercy in this land. Death don't have no mercy.
And you can hear this week's Halloween edition of Inside Appalachia this Sunday morning at 7 and Sunday evening at 6, right here on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. Even though he's just in his early 20s, Twin City-based indie folk artist John Mark Nelson's name has already begun to be mentioned alongside other long-standing Minnesota musical heavyweights like the Jayhawks, Trampled by Turtles, Low, and Dan Wilson. Here is John Mark Nelson with Dream Last Night on this Mountain Stage Song of the Week.
Thank you.
John Mark Nelson with Dream Last Night. You can hear this song again and more music Saturday night at 8 on Mountain Stage right here on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. West Virginia Morning is produced with the assistance of Suzanne Higgins, Clark Davis, Jessica Lilly, Glennis Bohr, Dave Mistich, Roxy Todd, Liz McCormick, and Jesse Wright. Our theme music is by Matt Jackford. Our producer is Ashton Mara. Our director is Teresa Wills. I'm Beth Voorhees.